And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today we are recapping the senior night performance for the Jayhawks against TCU, and then looking ahead to Texas Tech, which is coming up this weekend to finish out conference play. To help me do that, I have joining me as usual, Steve Fetch, the basketball editor over at Rock Chalk Talk. Fetch, how are you doing tonight?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. So I don't know that the game went quite the way we were expecting. One, because I don't know that I was expecting Udoka to play. And after he did play, I don't know that I was expecting him to play as long as he did or them to need his performance as much as they actually did. But obviously, the story of the night was Udoka Azubuike on his senior night, just going absolutely insane in a 75-66 win for the Jayhawks over the TCU Horned Frogs. Udoka had 31 points. Had 14 rebounds, 5 blocks, just an absolutely phenomenal stat line. But before we talk about him specifically, was there someone else in this game that really jumped out to you, or was this all about Udoka?
Well, I guess if you want to go to the TCU side of things, Edric Dennis Jr. having the game of his life definitely stood out. It kind of reminded me of how Jordan McCabe for West Virginia looked like he was going to be the guy to sink Kansas. And, I mentioned he was one of the weaker perimeter players in the Big 12. Dennis, although his three-point shooting is actually not great, but not terrible. Other than that, he's probably another front runner for weakest, rotation guard in the Big 12. And he was certainly lighting things up last night for the Horned Frogs. So he's probably the one guy that I would mention. Obviously, Desmond Bain had a great game as well, but you kind of expect him to, and you're right. They definitely needed Udoka Azubuike, although I don't think anyone expected TCU to quite go nuclear from three like they did.
Yeah, I believe in the first half they were like 9 of 10 or 9 of 11, something ridiculous like that, and actually led at halftime 37-35, and it was insane just because of all the three-pointers that they were making. Udoka, I think at one point it was like 12-7 or something like that, and Doak had 10 of Kansas's 12 points. So I agree with you that the main people that stood out to me other than Udoka were over on TCU. So let's go ahead and turn it to Doak. Specifically, what was the most impressive part of his performance for you?
I think just the fact that he was able to play so many minutes on seemingly one leg. You watch him play on Saturday against K-State, and whenever he was in there, was severely hampered and certainly was not 100%. And he's out there challenging shots. He's out there guarding on the perimeter, really going after rebounds, still, obviously being double and triple teamed inside and being clutched and grabbed and held and stuff whenever he gets the ball inside. So just kind of the total package and the fact that he was able to play as many minutes as he did and obviously as well as he did was the thing that stood out to me more than anything.
Yeah, I definitely agree the fact that he was able to play that long. Funny, this was on his senior night. It was the most minutes he's ever played in a single game, and also his best stat line in terms of – it was his career high in points, I believe, as well. I haven't looked at all of them. I believe I remember someone saying that when he got there. And so, it was arguably, I don't even think it's arguable at this point. It was his best performance in his last home game in the largest number of minutes that he's ever played. And I think that speaks a couple things, the fact that his ankle probably is a little bit better than a lot of people were concerned that it was. But also just the fact that, I realize that TCU doesn't have a bunch of guys bruising down low, but it's a huge transition from him or a transformation from him to be able to play that long without being in foul trouble. He only had one foul the entire night. If he can have performances like these, it gives me hope that we're not, necessarily needing to be too worried, about whether he's going to foul out really quickly in the NCAA tournament. Oh, and I actually do stand corrected. He did have 36 minutes against Baylor. Which I was a little surprised that he had that many minutes. A quick cursory glance of his KenPom page, and I missed that one on accident. But, it's still just the fact that he was able to play that many with so few fouls, I think it's got to be an encouraging sign for anybody who was worried about playing time for him in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that it also shows that he can probably play through injury fairly well. And obviously, you don't want him to get hurt again. And obviously, it certainly impacted his mobility in that Kansas State game. But the quick recovery time, obviously, it's more than you would have in terms of a weekend. You know, if he gets hurt Thursday or Friday in the NCAA tournament, you got to play Saturday or Sunday right away. And obviously, you don't get to wait till Wednesday. But definitely gives you hope that if he gets, you know, roughed up in the second round or hopefully, you know, the Elite Eight, he can play in, you know, the next game. So I think that that's good as well. And I think makes you maybe a little bit more confident that one ankle tweak isn't going to be the end of the world.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, it's also encouraging the fact that there was other guys who seem to be dealing with their own injuries, and it seems like it's not a KU game without at least one or two guys tweaking some sort of injury. I actually had seen McCormick. I looked away from my TV for a little bit because I was having ESPN Plus feed issues. Imagine that. And I hadn't realized that McCormick had checked into the game, and when he like turned his ankle a little bit so much they had stopped play, I thought Udoka had re-injured his ankle, and I was panicking for a second until I saw that it was McCormick, and that he seemed to be okay, was able to walk it off right after that. But you know, I don't think it's legally possible for this team to play a game without somebody tweaking some sort of injury or injuring something. All right, so in terms of other standout players from this game, was there anybody else other than, like, I think Devon Dotson is kind of the other guy that you think of. He had 18 points on 3 of 9 shooting from 2, 2 of 3 from 3, had 6 free throw attempts that he made. You know, he had 6 rebounds, a couple turnovers, but 4 steals. So overall, I thought he had a very, very good game as well. But are you concerned at all that no one else really seemed to be putting up offensive numbers, especially since TCU doesn't really seem to have that great of a defense? Or was it just kind of one of those weird nights that we seem to be getting quite a bit for this team?
Well, I think kind of yes and no. I think that it's obviously you want to have, you know, more of a balanced attack and more of a you know, ability where if Dotson or Azubuike have a an off night, you know, someone else can step up for you and stuff like that. But those guys have off nights so infrequently that it kind of has turned into if Christian Brown hits a couple of threes or Isaiah Moss hits a couple of threes or, you know, Marcus Garrett has one of those games where he goes for 15, 20 points. It's more of a bonus than anything else, and something that if that does happen, it's really tough to see Kansas losing. I think you're right in that if they do lose, it's going to be a game kind of like this where the other team is really hot from three. Kansas maybe only is relying on a couple of guys to score points, and it's coming against a little bit better opponent than TCU. I think that that's probably the formula if you're a team looking to upset Kansas and add in some offensive rebounds, which, you know, TCU didn't really do. But if you combine those three things, that's probably the blueprint. So yeah, I would say I'm mildly concerned, but you know, they missed a lot of open threes, and I don't really expect Isaiah Moss to go 1 for 7 from three very often either. I think that you know, he's a reliable shooter and is going to make more of those, and hopefully Christian Brown starts shooting those open threes a little bit more. He pump faked and kind of dribbled out of them a little bit, which I don't like to see. I'd rather just see him let him fly, although it does, you know, he doesn't have the quickest release yet, so maybe he's worried about that. But I think that's kind of the next step is getting him to take some more of those catch and shoot threes.
Yeah, definitely. To be honest, like looking through this, what you're kind of talking about, like there was a lot of different things that just didn't seem to go right at all. Talking about like Isaiah Moss, you know, not shooting very well, and Christian Brown kind of not stepping up as that second guy to really do it. Kansas in general only shot 12 threes on the night. And again, this was, I think, a big part of that was just the fact that Udoka Azubuike was having pretty much anything he wanted down low, was getting that, especially really early in the game. And so they just didn't really start shooting threes until much later in the game. You know, Azubuike also was 5 of 13 from the free throw line. So he had 14 shots, but he also had 13 free throws. You know, so like he was doing a lot of work. They were running, you know, 41% of the possessions that went through him, which is an insanely high number. I'm sorry, 41% of his possessions. So when he was on the floor, 41% of the possessions he used, which is ridiculously large. Like normally, you know, I would expect to see that between somewhere like 20, 25%. maybe a little bit higher for a guy like Doak, but 41 is absolutely insane. Essentially, you know, two out of every five times they went down the floor when he had the ball, he ended up with it in his hands doing something with it, which is ridiculous to kind of think about. But no one else really stepped up. Marcus Garrett had another great defensive night, I thought, but I was expecting a little bit more from you know, Brown or Moss. Dotson had a decent night offensively. And defensively, he was actually pretty good too. But I just don't know. Really, the only thing that really disappointed me in this game, though, was the fact that Doak didn't get to shoot a three-pointer.
Yeah, I think everyone was kind of hoping for that. I mean, just that should have been his last possession, right? Just let him launch a three and maybe equal the Jeff with the 100% from deep. I think you're right about, you know, the team overall defensively playing well, which seems weird to say when you're looking at one of the worst offenses in the league scoring over a point per possession. But, you know, made a ton of three-pointers, made a ton of guarded three-pointers. You know, some of those early ones weren't guarded very well, and that's just kind of, you know, whatever it is, what it is. But then Kansas, you know, really clamped down and made him shoot a lot of tough ones, and TCU just made them, which credit to them. But I think that, you know, you should also be optimistic if you're a Kansas fan that they're not going to be able to, or just an opponent in general is not going to be able to, you know, shoot like that from deep very often against you if you're guarding on the perimeter like that. And, you know, TCU shot 9 to 24 from two, which I think is more representative of their inability to score. And, you know, Kansas forced a lot of turnovers, limited them on the offensive glass and stuff like that. So if TCU shot a more normal game, I mean, they're well below a point per possession. So you're right. I think Kansas played pretty well defensively. Jesse Newell noted a couple of times that Marcus Garrett is probably pretty hobbled as well, speaking of injuries, and got beat up top guarding the ball defensively. But then he kind of, you know, turned it on in the second half a little bit, had those steals. And who knows if he, you know, just maybe is suffering from a little bit of something and needs some rest, or if there's something else more serious going on, who knows. But, you know, Kansas definitely needs him just as much as they need Dotson and Azubuike 100%, more so on the other side of the ball, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's hard to be too concerned about this, because you're right. The defense inside was absolutely ridiculous. And even with Garrett dealing with some sort of, you know, being hobbled again, he still played fantastic defense, was still able to shut down quite a bit. You know, most of those threes that they were raining, especially in the first half, like I saw at least three of them that were from NBA range. You know, a couple of them were like, you know, guy pulls up to give him a little bit of space, or doesn't drive by him. He just pulls up for a random three in a spot that you wouldn't really expect. And then obviously they were just hunting for threes, because that seemed to be the only way that they could get the offense going. They really stopped shooting inside because they were having such a hard time actually getting inside to do anything. And so, yeah, I mean, I definitely don't think you can fault Kansas for, you know, giving up 1.03 points per possession here because of just how insanely hot TCU was from three. You know, and talking about the fact that, you know, Kansas scored 75 and seemed to be having an off night from pretty much everyone but Doak, you know, they still scored 1.17 points per possession, which is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, that's a huge number there. This game was a little bit slower. Then, well, actually, I mean, I guess not slower than normal, because it seems like Kansas has been playing at a very slow pace so far this year. But like, it wasn't like they weren't scoring. It's just that the game was going a little bit slower, and TCU was keeping up because of those threes for so long that it seemed like maybe they just weren't playing as well as they actually were.
Yeah, and I think it was, you know, the possession totals were a little bit inflated too, just because there were a few more turnovers than you would kind of expect. Both teams over 20% of their possessions, which kind of a weird game for Kansas. I mean, Azubuike turned it over a lot. You know, Christian Brown turned it over. Ochai obviously turned it over twice. You know, Dotson twice. So, you know, it's kind of one of those, other than Azubuike's five, which I think, there were the 2 3-seconds, those go against him. I don't know that both of them were 3 seconds, but a couple of people mentioned that Jamie Dixon was begging for 3-second calls over and over and over again, so I suppose they had to throw him a couple. And then he stepped on the baseline one. So it's not like they're, you know, ones where he's throwing the ball away or getting the ball taken from him. They're kind of, you know, those dead ball turnovers, which aren't the worst thing in the world, because then Kansas gets to go back and set up their defense. So I'm not 100% worried about those turnovers, especially if they come that way. And like I said, the rest were just kind of, you know, one here, one there. So it's not like there's any one person who was a problem child, so to speak. And then on the flip side, you know, TCU certainly helps teams out and turns the ball over quite a bit on their own. But Kansas, I think, did a pretty good job turning up the pressure in the second half and went on those couple spurts, which I think they're going to have to do a little bit more often. Obviously, Bill Self, you know, wants to sit back and play that half-court defense. But if they can get out and pressure the ball a little bit and force some turnovers, not only does it help steal some possessions and make them have to defend a little bit less, but also leads to easy points on the offensive end. And we've seen, for as good of a team as they are and have been this year, there's certainly stretches where they struggle to score. So anything they can do to manufacture points off turnovers, I think, would be helpful. So I kind of like that game plan defensively for them last night.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people just kind of assumed that TCU wasn't going to be able to catch up, but or keep up with Kansas. But anytime you're that hot from three, you know, you're definitely gonna be able to stay in the game. But that's all they were really able to do, was stay in the game for, you know, until about halfway through the second half. They never really, I don't think, threatened in a way that, you know, I felt that the actual result was in doubt. Yeah, when they went down at half, you know, when Kansas was down by two at the half, it was a little worrisome. But then, of course, you realize that they were shooting an insane clip from three. There's no way they were going to keep that up. And if you just looked at the box score at half, like, they were already shooting really poorly from two. So it was just a matter of keeping up that defensive pressure and knowing that there's no way that they were going to finish, you know, 18 to 20 from three for the night. So, all right. I don't know that there's that much more to talk about TCU. So before we take a quick break, was there any other final things you wanted to mention about this game?
No, I think we can. Well, I guess we probably should say, unless you have this saved for something else, you know, congrats on the Big 12 championship. You know, nice to have it back home. It seems like it's been forever.
Oh, of course.
Kansas has won one. Also, you know, I made a couple
of
wagers with some people. I have to brag a little bit here, where, you know, after they lost to Baylor, there was a lot of, you know, sky is falling type stuff. And I put it out both in the comments section and on Twitter that, you know, I'm willing to bet anyone, any amount of money that, you know, Kansas would win at least a share of the Big 12 title. And fortunately, no one took me up on it at an amount that would make me feel uncomfortable. So that was good. Although that one sure would have paid off last night if they would have. But yeah, it's just nice to see that. Nice to see that the, I guess, confidence that I had in the team was not misplaced, and that they really are as good as I kind of thought they were all season.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the perfect place to kind of talk about this before we get into the games for the weekend, because you're right. The fact that they have won is absolutely insane at this point, even if it's, you know, just a share so far. But, you know, at 16-1 and just now clinching a share of the title, that in and of itself is kind of ridiculous. And just thinking about, you know, Baylor could very well go 16-2 in the conference this year and not even win a share, because Kansas would be, you know, losing only that single game to Baylor, which is just absolutely insane to think about. You know, we've talked about how big the Big 12 races are, and, you know, how Kansas always seems to kind of win, you know, be up a couple games at the end after it seems like it's close. This is one I think is going to live up to being just as kind of as close and, you know, as not comfortable. Yes, obviously they have gone ahead and clinched the share, but you would definitely like to have it outright to kind of close, you know, any doubt at all about how good this team is compared to the rest of the conference. You know, I do think if they win it outright, they could even afford a loss in the Big 12 tournament, even to a team like Baylor, and still hold on to the overall number one seed. So you would like to go ahead and finish this off against Texas Tech and then just be able to kind of deal with the Big 12 tournament kind of being a, you know, kick guys in, let guys get some work in, but not really too worried about any of the results at all. So, all right. So we are going to go ahead and turn our attention to the Texas Tech game. But before we do that, I need to go ahead and throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right. So obviously looking ahead to the weekend, you know, Baylor is playing at West Virginia. Kansas is playing at Texas Tech. If Kansas wins or Baylor loses, you know, then Kansas wins the conference outright. I think there's an interesting conversation to be had about Baylor and West Virginia, but I also don't know that I want to spend a bunch of time breaking that game down. I would rather talk exclusively about this Kansas and Texas Tech game, but Before we do that, though, is there any comment at all that you want to get off your chest about that Baylor West Virginia game?
That I don't want to watch it, and you okay. have to force me at gunpoint to do so, or?
Well, you are in luck because it is an ESPN Plus game. So unless you really go out of your way, you're not even going to like stumble.
Oh, thank God!
So.
Yeah, I never thought I'd say this, but thank God for ESPN Plus.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, I think, just because West Virginia seems to be doing at least enough to kind of save their season. Like, that's kind of the only, I think, bit of intrigue there is that, you know, there's a lot of people questioning whether West Virginia is on the bubble or whether they're safely in the tournament field. If they can win that game, that solidifies them and they don't have to worry about it at all. But that's, I think that's enough comments about that one. Let's turn our attention to the Kansas and Texas Tech. You know, I don't know that a lot has necessarily changed since the last time that these two teams played. Other than the fact that Texas Tech, you know, I mean, they've been just as inconsistent now as they were earlier this year. And Kansas looks just as good, I think, as they did earlier this year. You know, but that game still kind of managed to be, you know, at least something that was worth talking about. It's not like Kansas, you know, completely blew them out of the water. And so it's a matter of, you know, what are you expecting from this game? Do you think that Texas Tech is going to have a chance in this one? I guess really the real question is, you know, how seriously is Kansas going to take this now that they've actually clinched at least a share of the title?
Yeah, I think Kansas obviously wants it outright. I think they're probably going to play their full lineup, although I guess I will say if, you know, maybe there's some question about if people are healthy and stuff, they might err on the side of not playing guys huge minutes. That first game, you're right, it ended up being, a 3-point game, but it was certainly, you know, Kansas was up comfortably for the majority of the game, and then Texas Tech kind of crawled back, and Kansas did the thing that they have unfortunately done a little bit too often this year, where they're letting teams, you know, come back a little bit after huge leads, which is something that I think they need to maybe fix a little bit. You know, went from a 10-point lead with like 6 minutes left to all the way down again to that 3-point lead at the end. Texas Tech has been kind of interesting. You know, they're third in the Big 12 in terms of point differential, although they're only 9-8 in Big 12 play, and I think they're like a comfortable, well, somewhat comfortable 8 or 9 seed when you look at bracket matrix. But their resume does not really scream out lock NCAA tournament team. I mean, I think they need to do something in the Big 12 tournament or, you know, beat Kansas here. They don't really have a signature win on their resume. If they did beat Louisville, that's a signature win. I apologize. That's not correct. But other than Louisville, you know, they lost to Iowa, they lost to Creighton, they lost to DePaul. They've lost
up until a month ago, they had Virginia on there that would have been a signature win as well, until West Virginia completely fell off. Like I don't know, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I don't know that, like, looking at their resume, I think they are comfortably a top of the bubble team where, like, it's hard to imagine them not being in the tournament because of the resume, but there's nothing that screams, other than that Louisville win, there's nothing that screams you have to put them in the NCAA tournament. Like, you can make an argument that maybe they don't have a, you know, enough big time signature wins to say that, yeah, duh, you have to put them in. But I think it's also hard to find any huge, gigantic holes in the resume. I mean, yeah, they have that loss to DePaul that was, you know, overtime on the road. You know, they have that loss again. But, like, all their big losses have been on the road, and they've beaten basically every bad team that's at home that they should have.
Yeah, they're the last 9 seed if you look at bracket matrix, which takes, I don't even know how many people who do brackets.
Yeah, it's like 65 or something like that,
and
professionally.
And yeah, and my cat is currently laying on my keyboard, so I'm gonna have to do the rest of this by memory. But they're like 50 something in wins above bubble, which just, you know, as it sounds, like, takes you know, the schedule of an average bubble team, or how many wins against the schedule a bubble team would be expected to post. And so that's not very good. I mean, that's, you know, not at large bid territory, but they're also ranked pretty high in both KenPom and Torvik. So if they do get in and they're a 9 or a 10 seed, you know, they're basically every 1 or 2 seeds nightmare second round matchup, because they certainly have some talent, certainly have some good players, certainly have the ability, I think, to make a run. So definitely glad that, you know, they're definitely not going to be that second round opponent for Kansas, because they're a conference opponent, and the Big 12 won't have enough teams in there to make it so that they can have second round conference matchups. So that's good. I think, you know, either Gonzaga or San Diego State is going to not be very excited to see Texas Tech in the second round, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm definitely all for that. I think that it's kind of strange because the Big 12 has a bunch of intriguing teams that could potentially go far in the NCAA tournament and could potentially fall flat on their face, especially when you get past, you know, Kansas and Baylor. Like, all four of the other teams that are right now considered to be fairly certain to at least be, you know, on the bubble until the very end, you know, they all could potentially make it and could potentially go on a little bit of a mini run, like making it to the Sweet 16, depending on how matchups go. Like, it's not hard to think about any of these teams, including Texas Tech, getting hot over the course of a weekend and going on a little bit of a run. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, they kind of remind me of those Wichita State teams, not the one seed team, but kind of those teams after it where they didn't really beat any of the good teams on their schedule and maybe just weren't at that quality, but beat the ever living daylights out of the bad teams on their schedule. And maybe that inflates their record in KenPom and Torvik and stuff that are so dependent on margin of victory. So maybe a little bit overrated by those metrics because they just don't maybe have the talent to stack up against the good teams. But, you know, they also put in a good effort against Creighton, you know, lost against them in overtime, you know, lost to Kentucky in overtime, certainly played Kansas well. So you're right. I mean, they're kind of, if you catch them on a hot day and catch them on a day where they're making their threes, they're going to be probably pretty tough to beat. But if you catch them when they're not playing well, I think they're going to be, you know, not very tough to beat. And I think one thing, I don't know if you want to get into this yet or if you want to wait till the actual game, but late in games, when I've seen Texas Tech play, and granted that's, I mean, the Kentucky game, the Kansas game, this Baylor game that they just had, they sure do some weird stuff late in games. And I mean, Kansas has actually not been great late in games either this year, but just the looks that they drop on offense are just basically nothing. They're not really running offense. Defensively, you know, they're losing guys and losing assignments late, which is something that you don't really expect from a Chris Beard team. So I don't know if there's something with them just not being as experienced as they were last year or not as good as they were last year or what has happened, or if, you know, coaches have kind of maybe caught on to what Chris Beard likes to do late in games or something like that. But they certainly are doing some weird stuff late in games to the point where I don't think it's just luck is the reason why they're, you know, losing all these close games.
Yeah. I mean, you know, kind of looking, because you talked about how well they played Kansas last time and kind of looking at that, you know, Doak had 5 points in that game, was off all night long. I think the way that he's playing, like barring injury, I have a hard time imagining Doak taking a step back again, because I don't think a lot of that was due to really what Texas Tech was doing. It was the fact that Doak got into such early foul trouble and wasn't really able to establish anything down low because of that. And then, you know, Jamias Ramsey was just going insane during that game, and they kind of had to shift away to try to counter that a little bit. So, like, I don't think that even though this is going to be in Lubbock, I don't think that this is going to be a similar sort of game. I don't think that Texas Tech is going to have anywhere near as much, you know, of that success inside. But it's also, like you said, like, you don't really know what you're going to get with this team. They do some weird things at the end of the game. And so it's kind of difficult to really see how Texas Tech is going to play this. And with the changes that Kansas has made, you know, especially with the changes that they made against Baylor, you have to think, like, how much is Texas Tech going to be able to take a look at that and try to find ways to counter it? You know, because I think what Kansas did against Baylor in the return game down in Waco can be super successful as well against what Texas Tech normally tries to run. So it's a matter, I think, of, you know, who can kind of outcoach the other one. And while Chris Beard is kind of the new hot young coach, you know, like the big name that everybody is kind of ready to latch onto now, he still, I think, you know, is at best comparable to what Bill Self can do. I would probably still give Bill Self the edge at this point, but you know, I can at least admit it's not going to be, you know, Beard getting completely overmatched by what Self is able to put together. But you know, I also don't think that he has a magic bullet that will allow him to really kind of get through what Self game plans, unless, you know, it's just a kind of a difference in talent that day where Texas Tech is just playing kind of at their peak and Kansas has kind of fallen behind.
Yeah, and Texas Tech, or I guess I should say Baylor, has kind of adjusted to what Texas Tech does defensively and kind of run a lot of that same stuff. So I do wonder if Kansas goes to that high ball screen offense a lot. And then, you know, like Bill Self mentioned a few times, they do that a lot anyway. But I do wonder if they're going to do that kind of over and over and over again and try to get into the middle. There was a really good post by CJ Moore after the first meeting with Texas Tech about how Kansas did a pretty good job getting into the middle, mostly just by Devon Dotson being faster than everyone else and taking advantage of gaps and getting into the middle. But certainly with other stuff that they're able to run with their pick and roll game and entering the ball into the high post to Marcus Garrett and running the pick and roll with Doak and just, you know, planting Doak in the middle of the lane and throwing it to him and with the high screen and stuff like that. So I wonder if they're going to do a lot of that stuff. I think they have the personnel to attack that defense pretty well. Obviously the issue is going to be Texas Tech loves to flop and draw charges and stuff like that. And you can generally get away with that at home a little bit more easily than you can on the road. And the refs didn't really reward that in Allen Fieldhouse. I think Kansas did a pretty good job of going around those flops too, but you know, that's something they're going to have to stay disciplined on and stuff like that. And on the flip side, Kansas has done a lot of that no middle stuff too, where they're icing a lot of ball screens and stuff. And Texas Tech, he hasn't really, you know, when I watched them play against Baylor, they didn't really seem to figure out how to counter that, but maybe they'll take what they learned in that Baylor matchup and apply it to this Kansas one and kind of be a whole new offense. But, you know, once again, like with TCU, you know, Texas Tech shoots, well, not a ton of threes, I guess, but quite a few, and shoots them a lot better than TCU does on the season. So they're going to have to get out and guard the perimeter as well. And, you know, hope Texas Tech isn't as hot as TCU was.
Yeah, definitely. So, all right. Well, I don't want to get into official predictions because, of course, we will do that on the site. But I think it is safe to say that, you know, while it's definitely feasible that Texas Tech could win, it's hard to really expect them to make this one too extremely close. Again, barring something weird like injuries or, you know, anything strange like that. You know, the one other thing I do want to kind of get your thoughts on is how much do you think that Sylvia DeSouza is going to play in this game?
Huh, man, that's a great question. I think he's probably going to get some run. I don't see why not. Self said he'd be in uniform. David McCormick has been kind of up and down. I think they do want to limit Udoka Azubuike if they can and rest him up for, you know, the Big 12 tournament, but more importantly, the NCAA tournament. Who knows, maybe he wants to try out that two-big lineup again now that he's got three bigs to choose from. So I think he'll play a little bit. I think the fact that TCU has more of like non-traditional big men, you know, a lot of big men who like to play on the perimeter a little bit. I think that that's more Silvio's game. I think that if, you know, Silvio were a member of the rotation, this would be the type of matchup that he would play. So maybe Bill Self wants to try him out and see if he can play against those types of teams if they run into one in the tournament. So, yeah, I'll say he'll get, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah, I also wonder how much is, you know, that's going to depend on, because Baylor and West Virginia tips off an hour before Kansas and Texas Tech does. So I'm wondering if at halftime he'll kind of be checking to see how that game's going and see, you know, how badly do they need that one in order to be able to win outright. You know, if there's a chance that he can get Silvio extended minutes, maybe not necessarily push for this last one win because West Virginia has already pulled off the upset. You could see Silvio's minutes, I think, expand a little bit at that point. Maybe, you know, get some extra rest for Azubuike and some of the other starters and just kind of see what they can do there. But I do think that they're going to treat this one like normal, kind of get him on a normal rotation, maybe give him a few extra minutes. Maybe, like you said, kind of try out the two big lineup in a few spots because now they can go ahead and do it. And, you know, they actually have the bodies for it at this point. I feel like even though this game is going to be important to them, that they are going to try to treat this as a way to try to experiment a little bit, to kind of almost kind of treat it like a beginning of the season game where you're shuffling lineups, trying to figure out, you know, what roles you can do, focusing more on guys like Silvio and Inaruna and, you know, guys that don't necessarily get to play so much. But Bill Self is a very competitive guy. He definitely still wants to win. So, all right. So that'll be it for our preview of the Texas Tech game. Any other final thoughts about the weekend or any thoughts about, well, I guess any seeding or any other big topics?
Well, I think that, you know, you have mentioned a couple of times that Kansas has a chance to lock up the number one overall seed if they win the Big 12 outright. I think you're probably right. I think even if, you know, Baylor would then go win the Big 12 championship, as long as Kansas doesn't lose in the first round of the Big 12 tournament, I think they probably will be the number one overall seed, which to me is huge. I mean, if you're looking at the teams that Kansas doesn't match up great with and teams they want to avoid as long as possible, among the elite teams anyway, I think Baylor and Gonzaga are, you know, right there. Baylor more so just because they're really, really good. And the offensive rebounding still scares me, even though they haven't really been able to offensive rebound very well in either of the two matchups. But Gonzaga, I think just their offense is so good, and I think they do so many things that would challenge Kansas. And even this new, more mobile Udoka Azubuike, I think would be challenged a little bit in a matchup against Gonzaga. So to know for sure that both of those teams are going to be stuck on the other side of the bracket, I think would be huge for Kansas, and knowing that you'd only have to play one of them and that would only be in the national championship game. And obviously at that point, you just, you know, whatever, you'll play them. So I think that is a big thing. And I think the West Coast Conference tournament is this weekend as well. So that's something that Kansas should be watching and should be rooting for Gonzaga to nab that third overall seed, I think. Although, you know, I guess it could come back to bite them. You know, if Gonzaga flips to that fourth overall seed and Kansas, you know, obviously is the number 2-1 seed, that's what you would want to see. So I still think that Kansas, you know, is going to be the number 1 overall seed, though. So I would tend to root for Gonzaga so that they can be the third overall seed.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think that as long as Gonzaga doesn't lose, well, I mean, because they get the bye until the semifinal game, which I believe, if I remember correctly, the semifinals are on Saturday night, and then the finals are on, or you know what, actually I think it might be that the finals are on Monday night and the semifinals are on Monday and the finals are on Tuesday, because I'm pretty sure that the conference tournament is just starting right now, so like right now being tonight, the on Thursday, so They definitely play multiple rounds, and it's a little weird setup. And of course, because BYU's in the conference and they do not play on Sundays, you know, they kind of have to shuffle that conference tournament around a little bit, outside of what you would normally expect to see. So, but you know, it's definitely going to be, I agree with you. It's kind of an interesting thing there, to kind of think about and how you want to position. You know, we can have a conversation after this week, when it seems pretty clear whether KU's going to be the overall number one, about where KU might want to go, since they will get that option. But one other topic I wanted to kind of bring up and get your preliminary thoughts on, and I say that because really, you know, this just happened, so there hasn't been a lot of time to digest it. Kansas released the notice, or their response to the notice of allegations. It's an 150-page document of a whole bunch of different stuff, along with two additional responses from Curtis Townsend and Bill Self. Have you had a chance to look over it at all? And if you have, do you have any initial thoughts?
You know, I honestly, I read like the first page, so I'm certainly not in any position to give any like major thoughts. I do think the stuff that they pointed out about like Larry Brown and stuff like that, and about how a lot of this stuff would be kind of an unprecedented ruling and an unprecedented reading of, you know, some of these things, and could kind of upheave a lot of what we know about college basketball and stuff. I thought that's all well and good. The rest of it, I'm frankly going to have to read and get back to you. Cause who knows? I mean, it's, you know, one of those things where, if you read what the NCAA has to say, it's, you know, the worst thing in the world. If you read what Kansas has to say, they didn't do anything. And the truth is probably, as usual, somewhere right in the middle.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I wasn't looking for anything really deep. I was kind of struck by the same sort of part that you were talking about, specifically talking about Larry Brown, and you know they're talking about how essentially what they are alleging in the notice of allegations would essentially say that anytime you're a head coach of an institution, that makes you a booster for that university for life, which I agree is kind of a ridiculous notion to think that, you know, Larry Brown, who is right now coaching for another school, if he's trying to recruit a guy, he's going to be recruiting a guy to his own school, not to Kansas at this point. And so it's definitely an interesting way to kind of think about that. You know, and I'll be interested to kind of see, to have someone else kind of break it down. I'm sure that some of the guys over in the national podcast are going to, they'll probably ridicule parts of it. They'll probably, you know, point out where it's, you know, makes sense in other cases. And we will probably talk about this again sometime next week when we can both have an opportunity to kind of take a look at it. But we have about a minute left. So do you have a random sports minute for us today?
Not one that I could do in a minute.
No. I think, you know, you had given me kind of a homework assignment to try to pick an Arena Football League team. I'm sorry, the XFL team. I still have not gone to pick one yet, but do you have a couple that you think that I should be keeping in mind?
I think mine's St. Louis. You know, the fact that they've kind of adopted the XFL so wholeheartedly after getting their NFL team stolen from them. It hurts to root for a Missouri team, but I kind of like that. So I don't even know. I think they're the Battlehawks. So
yes, they are. That's the one I was kind of leaning towards. That's the one I was kind of leaning towards. The other one would have been the one that's kind of close, the DC Defenders, because I live out in Virginia. So that's the closest one. But I'll have to do a little bit of more recon. And maybe after this, you know, after this weekend, I can have one decided and then we can actually talk about it fully. So, but we will go ahead and leave it there. Fetch, thank you so much for joining me tonight. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million of apps that are out there. Subscribe there so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out. If you can give us a rating and review, 5 stars and nice comments, it'd be absolutely great. But if not, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring you guys this podcast to give you guys all the information that you need in as entertaining a way as possible. So if you ever have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, you can email me at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can contact me on Twitter at rockchalkpod. Of course, you can always interact with Fetch over on Twitter as well at rockchalktalk. But we'll go ahead and leave it there. Fetch, thanks for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening. And we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.